So tonight I'm going to talk about desires and true needs. There are all kinds of statements in Buddhism, statements about the problems of desire. You know, freedom is absolute release from desires. You know, sometimes the second noble truth is translated as desire is the cause of suffering. It can also be translated as craving is the source of suffering. And I think it breeds a little confusion between the way words are used in Pali and Sanskrit and the way words are used in English. You know, certainly there are some instances in which we desire food, but we need food, you know, and it's certainly true that if you hold your breath for any extended period of time, you're going to really desire breathing, you know. I think Western medicine would be unambiguous in saying it's a bad idea to try and develop disattachment to the desire to breathe when you're holding your breath. You know, we need the breath. And so it brings up this interesting question about the relation of desires and needs and what do we want versus what do we need. And I think the foundational Buddhist story, the legend, the original legend of Buddhism, is actually quite instructive here. According to this legend, Prince Siddhartha grew up in complete pleasure. He had everything he wanted as a boy, you know, all the toys he wanted, you know, when he was old enough, he had wives to enjoy. It was just uninterrupted pleasure for the first, you know, 16 or so years of his life. Then he discovered the reality of old age, sickness, and death. And especially when he discovered death, he saw through the pleasure. This whole life of pleasure that he had been having, this is not going to bring me abiding happiness. And so then he starts off on his quest. And the first part of his quest, he went over to the complete opposite. You know, well, pleasure's not the answer. I'll go to extreme asceticism, denying the body. You know, eating as little as possible. You know, sleeping as little as possible. Sometimes in Theravada Buddhism, you see statues of a almost skeletal Buddha, you know, the starving Buddha in the face of his asceticism. And what he found was, in denying the fundamental needs of the body, that created so much distraction that it actually detracted from his work, detracted from his ability to focus. And so then he settled on what he wound up calling the middle way, not pursuit of pleasure, not extreme asceticism, but this balance in the middle. And that's what brought him to the enlightenment experience. So sometimes Buddhism is called the middle way. And you might say that, you know, the part of what is meant by the middle way is we honor our needs, we honor our real needs, but we resist all the places that desire can take us. Desire has a way to amplify needs endlessly, you know. How can I say, you know, we have a need to eat, but then we have the desire, well, I want this restaurant or this brand, or I want this food in this way, not too salty, just this temperature, you know, on and on and on. And I'll also say with pleasure, you know, I think it's hard, you know, those of us who have grown up in America, we have this background narrative of Puritanism, which says that pleasure is essentially a bad thing, you know, and pleasure is always dirty or wrong or something like this. And that's not the message of Buddhism at all. It distorts Buddhism to overlay that puritanical reading on it. As far as Buddhism is concerned, if your present moment experiences pleasure, enjoy it, you know, take it in fully, you know. The problem of pleasure is that we grasp onto it, that we want to, you know, we take that fleeting experience and we want to continue it, or we start to strategize, you know, how am I going to get more of that, or, you know, whatever. But if we just experience it when it's present and let it go, that's consistent with Buddhism. So how do we begin to discern what are our real needs and you know, all the arabesques that desire places on top of our real needs? And I'll say, I think a very good model is hunger, physical hunger. Hunger is a need, and hunger is innate. No one teaches us hunger. No one has to tell us that we're hungry. If we're out without food for a while, we get hungry. It's a visceral experience. And so that, you know, from earliest childhood on, you know, really, you know, it seems from the time people are born, they have the experience of hunger. The experience of satiety, the experience of having just enough, that's a bodily experience, but it's exceptionally subtle. It's something that takes tremendous training and tremendous practice to attend to. You know, and often if food is good, if we're enjoying the food, then we keep on eating, then suddenly we get to the place where we're bloated and we far overshot satiety, you know. And similarly, if we're having dinner with friends and we're social and laughing and talking and, you know, and thereby not able to pay attention to our body, it's easy to overshoot satiety. Satiety is very subtle, and often it takes a few minutes, like, I think I might be there, and then I actually have to stop eating for a few minutes and just feel into it, and it takes a while to sense it. I find that I really have to ground in the body and turn off the head entirely to feel satiety. And it's the easiest thing in the world to miss. And I think in a way, all of our needs are like that. We're keenly aware of when a need is not met. But when we have enough, you know, the distinction between what's enough and what's too much, that's much harder. I'll say also, very interesting with hunger, if, for example, suppose I miss a meal or because of logistics or whatever, I don't have a chance to eat and there's a longer time, so that by the time I am eating, I'm famished. You know, often I find when I'm famished, when I'm, you know, more than ordinarily hungry, sometimes the feeling of hunger is persisting even as I'm eating. And in fact, if I keep eating until the feeling of hunger goes away, I've already overshot satiety, you know? And so it's this very funny thing that if you're in the place of a need is not satisfied, it's much harder to know where the enough is. You almost naturally have to overshoot and come back, you know, that kind of thing. So hunger is easy to understand and it's easy to relate to because it's a physical need. It's a need, you know, we it's socially acceptable to see each other satisfying that need, that sort of thing. We also have emotional needs. In fact, we have all kinds of needs. And in fact, at this point, I'm going to share this odd document. Tell you what, I'll share it first with the Zoom folks. So you can always find this document. All you have to do is just search for Bay NVC needs list. NVC is nonviolent communication. You could just pass this around. So I dropped it in the chat for the Zoomies. And this is it's an odd document. It's what they call the universal human needs that we all have just because we're human. It's not, you know, it says partial list. It's not claiming that this is any way complete. And I'm not going to read through all of them, but just scan through. They're the ones having to do with physical sustenance, security, freedom, connection, meaning, you know, a wide variety of needs. Thank you. And I actually find this sheet itself is a powerful exercise just to go through and meditate on each word, you know. Am I feeling satisfied with respect to this word? You know, where, what do I really need? What am I lacking? You know, it can be a very powerful mirror to look into. So I'll say with emotional needs, and I'll just say, for example, you know, I like the list that David Dieta uses. He calls the five A's in relationship: attention, acceptance, affection, appreciation, and allowing. You know, we all need a little bit of that. But the funny thing is, all of those are things we can give ourselves. And it's not that we can be self-sufficient. It's not that we don't need other people. But the more I give myself attention, affection, appreciation, the more I, as it were, make room in myself to receive it from others. And the more, in a way, the more I attract that from others. If I'm already accepting myself, it makes it much easier for others to accept me, that kind of thing. And so I find it similar to the whole question of, you know, the analogy of food. You know, am I approaching the table with an ordinary sense of hunger, or am I approaching with this kind of famished, you know, over-hungry kind of thing? You know, and I think it's worthwhile also to say that we do this really funny thing of substituting needs, you know. You know, and if I have emotional needs that are not being met, you know, for example, there's emotional eating. That's one way of substituting needs. Or the people who talk all the time, or the people who engage in drama all the time and need to be the center of attention. You know, that sort of thing. You know, there's, you know, one need that I'm not paying attention to or not able to satisfy, so I'm going to max out on trying to satisfy this other one. That kind of thing. Substituting needs, we actually do harm both to ourselves and to others around us, you know. There's so many reasons why it's important for us to be authentic with ourselves about what our real needs are. And so I think I would say, you know, what is involved in discerning our own needs? Certainly tremendous, not just attention, but almost a deep listening to the body. Really taking in a tremendous listening. Because, you know, again, hunger is very loud. And desire is very loud, you know. But satiety, or the sense of having enough, that's very subtle. And I think self-love is a big part of it also. The needs that are the most neglected are the ones that we're not even aware that we have, you know. And that also, I think, is the value of a list like this, that it, you know, may be confronting, you know, I don't think I need that, you know, that kind of thing. I think I would say there's a vulnerability to feel into all our needs. What is it to have human needs? To be a human being is to have needs, you know. And the beauty of that vulnerability is that when I can hold it, when I can occupy it, that gives me tremendous empathy towards other people's needs, you know. On the contrast, if there's some need that I'm not satisfying in myself, then I might be almost resentful if I see somebody else satisfying that need that I'm not allowing myself to satisfy, you know, that kind of thing. And so it's a wonderful reflection just to ask yourself, you know, what do you really need in your life? What needs are being met? What needs are not being met? You know, and not to judge, not to make anything right or wrong, but just to feel into that. And again, I find meditating on this list can be helpful. So at this point, I'm going to share the quote sheet. Again, first I'll share it with the Zoomies. Okay, the quote sheet is in the chat. Thank you. Yeah. And the first one is from Mengzi. Mengzi, sometimes he's known in the West as Mencius. He's one of the only two Chinese philosophers who got blessed with a Latinized name, Confucius being the other one. Mengzi is, you might say, the number two guy in the Confucian tradition. He's known in China as the second sage. In many ways, he's the man who brought a tremendous heart quality to the entire Confucian tradition. This is one of my favorite quotes of his. "The Tao is near, but people seek it far away. What needs to be done in life is easy, but people seek for it in what is difficult." And just there's, you know, a lot about getting in touch with our needs just involves a tremendous simplicity, a simplification. You know, desire is what makes our lives so complicated and entangled. The Midrash from the Jewish tradition says, "God always provides what we need, but we must be ready to open our eyes and see it." The great philosopher Emperor Marcus Aurelius says, "Very little is needed to make a happy life. It is all within you, in your own way of thinking." And I think I would add not just your thinking, but your way of feeling and occupying your vulnerability and all that. And I think I would also balance that we need each other. We need connection also. You know, but it's the work that I do in myself that allows that to happen as well. This great one from Kabir. I love Kabir. "I felt the need of a great pilgrimage, so I sat still for 3 days." William Blake. "He who binds himself to joy does the winged life destroy. He who kisses the joy as it flies lives in eternity's sunrise." William Blake was a Buddhist before Buddhism even arrived in Europe. Theodore Roosevelt says, "There's not a man of us who does not at times need a helping hand to be stretched out to him, and then shame on him who will not stretch out the helping hand to his brother." You know, and it's true that, you know, there's this tremendous myth of self-sufficiency in America, and we need each other, and sometimes we really need the help and support of others, you know. Ramana Maharshi said, "Happiness is your nature. It is not wrong to desire it. What is wrong is seeking it outside when it is inside." Very simple. Khalil Gibran said, "Desire is half of life. Indifference is half of death." You know, and it's, how can I say? Sometimes it's, you know, it's thought that the opposite of desire is indifference, but Buddhism is just as much against indifference as it is against, you know, getting carried away with desire. John Bowlby, one of the founders of attachment theory, said, "We're only as needy as our unmet needs." You know? And again, a wonderful question just to think, to drop into. What are my unmet needs? Thomas Merton said, "When we live superficially, we are always outside ourselves, never quite with ourselves, always divided and pulled in many directions. We find ourselves doing many things that we do not really want to do, saying things we do not really mean, needing things we do not need, exhausting ourselves for what we secretly realize to be worthless and without meaning in our lives." Just a small indictment of modern life there. Alan Watts says, "This is what Zen means by being attached. Not being without emotion or feeling, but being one in whom feeling is not sticky or blocked, and through whom the experiences of the world pass like the reflections of birds flying over the water." Thich Nhat Hanh simply says, "To be beautiful means to be yourself. You don't need to be accepted by others. You need to accept yourself." The Dalai Lama says, "If one's life is simple, contentment has to come. Simplicity is extremely important for happiness. Having few desires, Feeling satisfied with what you have is very vital. Satisfaction with just enough food, clothing, shelter to protect you from the elements. And finally, there is an intense delight in abandoning faulty states of mind and in cultivating helpful ones in meditation. Incidentally, that magical word satisfaction, it comes from the Latin satis, which simply means enough. Satisfaction is knowing what is enough. Deepak Chopra says, to make the right choices in life, you have to get in touch with your soul. You need to experience solitude, which most people are afraid of, because in silence you hear the truth and know the solutions. Sharon Salzberg says, mindfulness helps us to get better at seeing the difference between what's happening and the stories we tell ourselves about what's happening. Stories that get in the way of direct experience. Often such stories treat a fleeting state of mind as if it were our entire impermanent self. And many times those stories are driven by desire. Tom Bodett said quite simply, they say a person needs just three things to be truly happy in this world. Someone to love, something to do, and something to hope for. David White says, people offer you the help you need, something it is impossible for you to do yourself, and you take it as an injury to your character and your abilities, instead of just saying, thank you, I really needed that. I'll tell you a great micro-discipline. Every day is to think of someone or something whereby you need to ask for real help. Something tremendously humbling about that. Mark Coleman says, nature teaches us simplicity and contentment because in its presence, we realize we need very little to be happy. John O'Donohue said, in each person, there's a point of absolute non-connection with everything else and with everyone else. This is fascinating and frightening. It means that we cannot continue to seek outside ourselves for things we need from within. The blessings for which we hunger are not to be found in other places or people. These gifts can only be given to you by yourself. They are at home in the hearth of your soul. Brené Brown says, a deep sense of love and belonging is an irreducible need of all people. We're biologically, cognitively, physically, and spiritually wired to love, to be loved, and to belong. When those needs are not met, we don't function as we're meant to. We break, we fall apart, we numb, we ache, we hurt others, we get sick. Greg Anderson says, when we are motivated by goals that have deep meaning, by goals that have deep meaning, by dreams that need completion, by pure love that needs expressing, then we can truly live. And finally, Lynn Robinson says, honor your desire for a new life. Say yes to the small inklings of interest and curiosity that present themselves each day.